Blog Talk Radio.
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho. Special guest tonight, we've got Margaret DeWeiss, and she's an ayahuasca experiencer and author. And we also have Mark the Badger Orcharding, and he's going to join us, and we're going to talk about some real fun stuff tonight. And we'll have I think I hear the badger now. Oh yeah, there it is. Hey, listen. Margaret, are you there? Are you on the? We should have you online here just in a second.
I'm here.
There we are, Margaret. Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Little rough start there with the show. It's either me or whatever I ingested before the show. No, actually, it's just I'm using a wireless router. Now, listen, folks, if something happens, and Margaret, if you're in the middle of something and something happens and I lose signal, I will call back in using the telephone. I have a router sometimes that goes out. Anyway, Mark's here and Margaret, before we're going to have a couple hours to talk and tell us a little bit about yourself. And when you get done with your intro, tell Mark what your and we need to know your full birth date, and I'm sorry. Now we could, you know, if you don't want to let the year out, you could go in the guest room with him privately. He just needs to know your birth date to figure out what your Mayan birth date is, so we give you a reading. But, yeah, tell us about yourself and your book.
Sure. Okay, I'm Margaret DeWeiss, and I have two books. I think the book that Blue Otter is talking about is called Black Smoke, and it's my journey into the Amazon jungle to be healed of cancer. I still do, over 13 years with the Shuar in the high upper Amazon, and we do ceremonies for curing, and the Shuar call the medicine that they make Natem, which in some ways is very similar to what people call ayahuasca. Ayahuasca is a Quechua word. So they use the word Natem. But the ceremonies involve working with spirit medicine for curing. And that's the short version.
Excellent. Well, go ahead and continue. You want to continue with the long version, or would you like to go through our Prophecy Keeper's initiation first?
Oh my goodness. You know, I am very, very, very private about any data about my birth.
I'll tell you what, if you don't mind, I can put you in in the guest room, you know, with him, and he,
okay.
You know, he can just give you. I'll do that, and what I'll do is I'll play the ayahuasca song for a couple of minutes, and
okay.
You guys will go into the private screening room and give him your full birth date. He won't tell anybody. And anyway, you guys are going in there right now. Here we go. And hi, folks. We're going to play ayahuasca song while those guys are going around and figuring out what her Mayan birthday song is. And this is a song called Ayahuasca. This is Blue Water. I'm back. I'm going to put everybody back on microphone. And Mark, you're back on mic. And Margaret, you're back on mic. Hey, if you don't want to do this, it's fine. Everybody's. We have to honor your tradition. Did you decide to go ahead?
Blue Water.
Yeah.
She's wanting to do it, but I think, but it's going to take a little bit more time, and we want to keep
it off air
right now.
I had to check in and make sure that that it was possible for me to actually do it. So,
waiting. We could talk about, we'll talk about something else, because it takes Mark a while to work it up. But
okay.
go ahead and tell us about your experiences and cancer. And let me add my first wife died of, she had breast cancer twice. And her mother died of ovarian cancer. Joanne had it in 82, again in 89. She passed away in 95. And her mother, she was 48. Her mom passed away at 51 of ovarian cancer. And her brother's daughter passed away in her 20s from cancer.
Mm.
So running. So this is near and dear to my heart. I know it's very near and dear to Dr. Charles L. Jotlohi Rogers, who is principal chief of the Cherokee Nation of Mexico. He is a doctor of hope.com, and he's been an oncologist in Mexico for 20 or 30 years. Been leading the way. He's been doing things 7 to 10 years ahead of what the FDA allows people to do here in the United States. So, go ahead and tell us about...
First of all, I'm sorry that your wife suffered this disease that tends to take a lot of people in our modern society. There's three reasons why people can get this. One is from not taking care of yourself and being in relationship to nature, which would include not smoking cigarettes or drinking to excess or eating foods that have processes in them that will cause you to become sick, or the environmental toxins. It sounds like the second type is what your wife and family experienced, which is genetically a genetic problem, and sometimes those can be cured and sometimes not. And the third type of disease is psychic or spiritual disease. So I believe strongly, and I've seen it, that in the spiritual diseases and also in environmental toxins, it's very, there is a good possibility that one can have spiritual healings that will work. Unfortunately, hereditary diseases are more difficult to cure, but not always impossible. Hope, that sounds great. I'm going to look into that. Blue Otter.
Oh, I'm here. I'm just a little. I was just over on Facebook, telling folks about the show. And but yeah, it's quite a disease. But you know, what's really interesting is that a couple of weeks. Well, and back in 1982, Joanne and I were living in Portland, and the very first time I ever heard from Creator was the morning that I woke up and I heard a voice say, an attempt will be made on the life of Joanne Mary Anderson during the dark of the moon. Mm. Well, the next weekend was, we're all paranoid and we had to do something on Sunday. We didn't, and that was the dark of the moon period. We almost got rear-ended. We kind of wondered whether that was it. Well, 2 weeks later, while she was dressing, I noticed she had blood mixed with lymph coming out of her right nipple. Mm. So we got her into the doctor right away, and they said she had precancerous changes. And they took the breast within a couple of days. Well, that was fine. And that was 82. And then 89, a checkup revealed that, she had it in the other breast, and I didn't realize at the time that back in those days it was a 13%, a 10% chance of lasting 13 years or vice versa, and she made it 13 years. But the interesting thing was is after she passed, the next week I was in a house of a friend of ours. It was her best friend, and I went, oh my gosh, I said, Betty, check the calendar and have you got a calendar? Yeah, it's over on the wall. And I went over and Joanne passed away at 11 o'clock Mountain Time on the 29th of April, 1995, which just happens to be right smack dab in the middle of a dark of the moon period. So we had some warning, and it was a part of Vader's plan, apparently, but she had she really wanted to had a strong desire to work with other folks that were going to be going into the spirit world. She'd read the Annalise Guerin books, and she was really looking forward to helping other people process out of this plane and into the next world. And I have seen her many times. She's spoken to me. She's remonstrated me. she told me, I'll be there to watch over me, and she has. And I ended up marrying her best friend, who was, now Joanne was 8 years older than I was. She was 30 when I married her, and I married her best friend, who was 12 years older, and We were married for 12 years, and she passed away. And for about, a year, 15 months or so later, I had two dreams that showed me that I was going to find another wife. Now, Betty had told me, Betty was, had the gift of spirit, too, and she woke up one morning, and she said, Creator told me, if you're not good to me, you're not going to get any more wives. And I didn't know what that meant. I figured, she's going to outshoot me. And, and she had a little bit of, well-treated, It's a borderline personality disorder. So, she could lose it once in a while. And I had to hold my tongue. But anyway, so she passed away in August of 2007, and then in the summer of 2009, I was at a friend's house in Colorado, And I dreamt of a woman in a wedding dress standing in front of a small house, or a little meeting hall, and indicated me, you know, that I might, you know, the feeling was I was going to find another wife. And then within a couple of days, I saw a picture of an area that had like boat docks and rolling hills and trees. And eventually I was led to Linda, and, you know, through a circuitous route. So, you know, Creator, you know, I'm lucky enough that Creator's had the grace to help me out. Otherwise, I could be a pretty sad guy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all been for a good reason. And
happy. I don't know about your second wife, but that your first wife is helping us folks down here, as human beings, because it's, you know, it's not easy, right? It's not easy,
and they do what they can. Well,
and
you've been through it too, I understand.
Twice. And,
oh, really?
My second book. My second book, Ecstatic Healing, does talk about the second time. And, it's very interesting. I was in Brazil, and I was in, I was at John of God's Casa, which I started going to 2001. Yeah, I was up in Canada with the healer, the Shuar healer. I was in Ecuador. I was in Brazil. I was in Africa, all kind of at the same time. I was doing. I was traveling for maybe 12 years, all over the place. And so he did a surgery on me, John of God, where my eye was cut into because I'm blind in one eye. Now, when the Shuar healer saw me in Guatemala, he said, "I can cure you of your breast cancer. I don't think I can cure your eye because you've had too many operations and they've put too much medicine in. It's like an 800-year-old object." He said, "But I will try." So John of God said that he was going to do that to open up my spiritual sight, and that one day I would see. Well, immediately after this physical operation, which was in the main hall of the casa, my spirit left my body, so you can't really feel what's going on, but you can, the pressure of the knife in your eye, you can feel. And
yeah.
It was this extraordinary experience, and I was basically taken to my room. I couldn't walk. Where I had visions for 4 days and four nights. In fact, every time I go to Brazil, it's like, okay, all right. So let's not walk around in the beautiful surroundings because you got to go over to these other places. And at that time, there were these spirit beings that told me exactly what to do, and these, just to make it very short, these asteroids started coming in front of me, and when they got very, very close, I could see microscopically, and I could see the hairs and the eyes and the mandibles and the claws, and it was a legion of black spiders. And so these eight beings said, you know, stay where we've put you. Do not move one finger. Don't move your head, because if you listen to us, you're going to be all right. That was one of the visions. And later on in the week after that process, I understood that John of God, and of course many other people that I've worked with, call that sea thing spiders. Because they don't put a name to what Western people call disease. Because if
right.
you attach a name to it, you attach the energy. And
yeah.
so this woman said, well, that's what John of God calls spiders. Spiders, that's what it is. When I was with the Zulus, that's basically what they called it. So I said, no, I'm finished with that. And
well, that's really that's interesting because the Lakota, they call for Iktomi, the spider, to knit you back together and to heal you. I didn't know whether you knew that or not.
Yeah, well, there's the, you know, the weaver, right?
Yep.
The web
right.
of life. Yeah. Well, there's certain certain serpents and spiders that are also used as a symbol for a particular disease that they do not want to name. You know, they'll say, oh, that person has spiders.
Wow.
So it's, yeah. And so at the end of a year, it came into being. And here, you know, I mean, I'd been working with John of God for a year and taking groups down, and I was working with this other healer and so on. And I'm like, that really, really got to me. That really got to me. I did remember that the beings that were taking care of me said it would be all right, but it was another kind of initiation process, a spiritual dive into the abyss for a while to look for faith. I feel now that I'm free of having to look and work in that direction. It's interesting because you know the psychic cancer that I was speaking about, or the one that is in the psychic body that affects the physical body, can be from a lot of different reasons, like I said, environmental toxins or food toxins, but it can also be emotional toxins, stress, wow. anxiety, worry, because those things just eat away at the body. That whole New Age thing about positive thoughts is true in its very essence. But, you know, the way that it's explained, I think, is a lot different than how I see it. So, yeah, I mean, the psychic body, and also in Brazil, the psychic body needs to be repaired before the physical. Sometimes that can happen instantaneously. These are my experiences, sometimes over a period of years. But my belief is that we're human beings, we're going to die, we're in a life process, we're in a spiritual process, and how we handle or not handle, and handle's not the right word, but how these parts of our bodies that are no longer helping us, perhaps hindering us, is a spiritual path. And it's, you know, it's a very personal journey that every person takes in one way or another at one time or another. So that being said, I don't tell people, you know, people call me and I don't say, no, don't have the chemo, no, don't do this, no, don't do that, because I realize that for them, the way to healing or dying or however it is that their life is supposed to be is something that they have to decide.
Right.
And, yeah. So you got me going when you talked about that, those spiders, that C word.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But,
well,
you know, I mean...
When you get to a place where you need to take a brief break, just tell me. I've got lots of neat place to things to play. And
Thank you. Great.
It's up to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. But you wanted to hear about the medicine in South America, is that correct?
Absolutely.
in the way that I know it, and I guess I've been doing it for 13 years, sometimes six nights in a row, that's pretty pretty intense, is that it's a high-level spiritual being that can come in many forms to different people. Basically, it's a doctor spirit or several doctor spirits that work on the psychic body and also on the physical body, cleansing, because cleansing toxins out of the body is a very important aspect to healing. The ceremonies usually take place in a temple. We call it a templo, and it's in the jungle with open walls and long vines, or not vines, palm roof. There's always a fire. The healer, whose name in the book is known as Carlos, is an incredible doctor spirit, a doctorer. He's, the spirits love him, you know, so the light has to be completely off, maybe just a little bit of a flame from the fire for him to see inside the body. And I've learned so much from him. He can see viruses. He can see the spirochetes from the Lyme disease. He can see diseased organs. He can see those spiders and where they're located. And one of the spirits that works through him is this large black jaguar. And this jaguar, when it comes in there, it's these claws, these big claws come out, and you know, it's just like very intense. And it goes right in where that tumor might be and grabs it, pulls it out. And this is in the psychic sense. I mean, it's not clawing the physical body. But the healer says, oh, I really want that jaguar out of me. The minute he's done doing his work, because he just wants to tear everything apart. So he's like a destructive force for the good of the body. And it's a very powerful being. You tell me some about some ceremonies, like some spirits that have come in your ceremonies.
Well, I was talking with Jaime O. Perez. Jaime is a Mixteca medicine man. And he also happens to have a master's degree in civic administration. He's run for mayor of El Paso. But he and I were talking about a prophecy, Mayan prophecy, called the Return to the Seat of the Jaguar.
Mm.
And so this apparently is part of the return to indigenous medicine, and I know cats in general are very healing, very soothing. They just looking at them or petting them helps lower your blood pressure. We've got two of them, one of the Cherokee clans is the blue or cat clan. And they're healers, so there's some dots that you can connect. Have you ever heard of a fellow by the name of James Flaming Eagle Mooney?
Absolutely, positively.
Ever spoken with him?
I don't believe I have.
James is quite a guy. He's really the host of this show, and. You know what? Just for the heck of it, we might be able to get him on the line. I haven't talked to him for a while. Let's see if I can get him on the line. Give me a second here, and this is going to surprise him because he hasn't heard from me for a while. But I'm sure he'd love to speak to you for a second. I just oops, hang on a second here. All right. We're going to surprise James.
Yeah. Sunday night, time for the surprise.
It's dialing. Here we go. Surprise.
Yeah, he's the host. He should be here, right?
Yeah. He's gone back to the medicine. He doesn't have any administrative responsibilities anymore. hang on a second here. Hello, James, are you there?
Yeah, I sure am. How are you doing? Well,
hey,
I haven't heard from you for a while.
Listen, I know this is a surprise, but if you got 4 or 5 minutes or however many, I've got Margaret DeWeiss on the phone. She's talking about her cancer surviving experiences in Brazil with the medicine, and I thought I asked her if she knew about you, but she never spoke to you. So if you got a few minutes, but talk as long as you can.
Hey, it's a pleasure.
Okay, who am I speaking to?
My name is Margaret DeWeiss.
What, DeWeiss?
DeWeiss, Margaret DeWeiss, mm-hmm. And we have a few mutual friends. I was just speaking about being in the Amazon jungle. I've been going down there for 13 or so years. We did have some communication about the Shuar elder that I work with down there, and I was just talking to Blue Otter about some medicine ceremonies that are conducted and the kind of spirits that, well, one of the spirits that comes through Carlos, the Shuar medicine man, which is a black jaguar. And he said, let's get James Flaming Eagle on the phone. I said, okay. So that's kind of up to speed.
Oh. Okay.
Well, James, I knew you'd had some experiences with the elders down south, and I thought we would consult with you.
Well, sure. I'm right here.
in the southern hemisphere, the energy is different than it is in the north or even in the equator. It would be very interesting for me to hear your take on how you felt this southern hemisphere medicine was in relationship or not relationship to northern medicine.
When you're talking about southern and northern, are you basically talking about ayahuasca and peyote?
I'm talking about the energy of the hemispheres and the plant spirits and the plants that are indicative of those areas, and are they they have a different process?
I don't know. I think they all have a specific purpose. Peyote is almost like a truth serum. It's very empowering when people really know the truth about themselves and about the creation. And so peyote is very, very powerful in that respect. I would venture to say that San Pedro, which is practiced northern and southern, is kind of a get-together. And it's like a happy medium of all the different medicines, and where it's very gentle, but yet it's very powerful, and it works wonders, providing the medicine person that is conducting the ceremony. I mean, a lot has to do with the people that are conducting it, and I think the people should be very prudent about who they put their spiritual lives in people's different hands, you might say.
I agree with you wholeheartedly about that.
I think ayahuasca is just an absolute cleansing of who knows how many generations it actually goes back and deals with things. And I would say that of all the masters of the different indigenous medicines, and there's thousands of them, actually. There's many people will consider that the Amazon is the is the world's medicine cabinet, and I have to agree with that.
I would have to agree with that too. When I was talking about Bishwar used Natem, I wrote a book called Black Smoke that details working with this master healer. His first liquid in his mouth was the Natem before breast milk, and he was trained from the moment he was born. And by 4 or 5, he was climbing high trees to get into these small orchids, and the moss that was growing down for his father was making medicine. And he would always say, "I want to play." And his father said, "No, you have to learn how to treat people." And so he's now through many decades of life, and I've been taking people down to the Amazon jungle that are sick to work with him. And I've certainly seen other situations where people are not treated properly. They pick up certain things, energetic things that shouldn't be there because the person who's conducting the ceremony is not capable of holding the space, protecting the people, mm-hmm. and healing them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah. Well, I think that, I just named a couple. I mean, there's other plants that are just extremely, extremely powerful. And unless you've been trained over a lifetime, you don't even want to deal with that. And one of them is the sacred datura.
Yeah, that's the floripondio.
and the people in, there's a group of ladies, or two of them that I know, someplace in the Amazon, that they actually teach that particular medicine. That is just extremely powerful. You've got to be very, very careful with that.
Well, yeah, you have to. Yeah, I mean, in my book, this Shuar is known as Carlos, and he works with that in certain times. For instance, mm-hmm. there was this Swiss man who was fallen a parapente, that's a hand glider, and his whole bottom half of his leg was completely shattered. They took him to the hospital in Quito. His cousin was there, a nurse, and they said, "Oh, you have to go back to Zurich. You're going to have several operations. You're never going to be able to walk well again," and a lot of pins. And so Carlos said,
I'm sorry, but I have a phone call that's coming in, and I need
okay.
to take that. But it was sure nice talking with you. Thank you.
All right. You too. Ciao.
Oh, yeah. And, go ahead and continue your story. While you're talking, I will see if I can get to Dr. Rogers on the phone. So just go ahead and continue your story.
Actually, it's about the doctor spirits that work with the particular medicine that James Flaming Eagle was talking about. In 2 months, quickly, this person's bones were mended, healed. He'd never been operated on, had no surgery, and walked without a cane. And it was due to the spirits that work with this particular plant. However, because it is so difficult to work with it, you have to be with a master healer that knows this medicine and these doctor spirits.
I'm talking right, Dr. Roger. I've got a guest on the line. She's talking about cancer and her experiences. Have you got 5 or 10 minutes to speak with her on the line? Okay, I'll call you at this number up there in just a couple of seconds. Okay, bye bye. Go ahead and continue while I get him on the line.
What I just shortly spoke about is having the bones come together, knit perfectly in a perfect way so that a person can walk. It's very good for hip joints, and a lot of people that have needed knee replacements have had great capabilities with this medicine. It's
oh, Dr. Rogers. Okay, sorry about that. The call was dropped. I'm going to try to get a hold of him again. Sorry about the chaos. This happens when you're doing things at the last minute.
You know, I think what Blue Otter means is like a really joyous being, huh? A lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of like that. Let's see. Let me make sure I've got the right phone number here. Hang on just a sec. Sorry about the delay. This is a live show, after all.
And Dr. Rogers is...
There we go. Finally got the...
Hello?
Hello, Dr. Rogers. Live talking with Margaret DeWeiss.
Super.
She has spent a lot of time in the Amazon, has dealt with the medicine, a cancer survivor, and we just briefly talked with James Mooney, and I thought you, being an oncologist in a traditional way, that's been 7 to 10 years of everything they're doing here in the United States, you might like to chat with her.
Oh, I'd love to. How are you, Margaret?
I'm super. I'm really good tonight, and it's a pleasure to meet you, and I would love to know what kind of things that you do to help people.
Okay. We've always been outside of the box, so to speak. Going back to the time of 1976, the first year I started seeing cancer patients, and so that tells you how old I am. But that was the last year of Dr. Ferguson. And Dr. Ferguson was the doctor that had gone from the United States down to the Amazon and the Chavarro people and worked with them in the early days, in the early 19, from 68 on. And he had been there early and had found a great many things within the rainforest. Now, the medicine man with Sean Connery is a composite movie, but it's based basically about 90% on Dr. Ferguson. And so Dr. Ferguson's a great guy to start with in where I got my start, because we both had a mutual friend, a lobbyist, an alternative medicine lobbyist who had started as early as 1960, saying that there's things out here that we need to be doing, and her name was Suzanne Love, and she worked trying to get the Texas legislatures to do something. But anyway, Dr. Ferguson had come back to the United States and actually made friends with the national director of the Cancer Institute, U.S. Cancer Institute, and so this is the strangest thing ever. And he had been newly appointed, I believe, by Carter at that time, President Carter, and so he basically had looked over all of Dr. Ferguson's notes and heard all of his stories and read this and read that, and saw the lab work done. And so he said, well, we're going to have this type of medicine in the U.S. because this seems to be very effective. And so Dr. Ferguson was thrilled. And this director of the National Cancer Institute, appointed by Carter, went to the committee that decides what drugs within the National Cancer Institute, what drugs are going to be used for cancer research. Mm-hmm. And they told him that they weren't going to do anything like that, ever. And so this is a good example of a political appointee finding out that the committee within the National Cancer Institute is filled by people who are proxies from various politicians, senators and such, that are being the influence of drug big pharma, drug companies, appoints these guys to that committee. Now, it may have loosened up some since then, but still, it's still a very closed show as to what you can do in the United States and what we'll be able to do in the United States. So when we, what we do is, and have for 30-something years, is we look at what is of interest in research papers and grants that are being done. Sometimes they're being done to support a product that is not going to be successful if it's ever approved. There's like three types of research going on in the U.S. One is somebody's actually genuinely interested in a new drug that might help. The second and more common is that groups of investors have gotten together with an idea for cancer treatment. And I don't know if you're familiar with the play and movie The Producers, in which they sell stock in Broadway performances, and what they want to do is sell 200% of the stock, which is fraudulent, and then they close the first night because the play is so bad that nobody can stand it.
Oh, my.
And so when the play closes the first night, then you get to keep 100%, the second 100% of the money that you fraudulently collected for the stock sold in the performance. And it's called The Producers. Well, in America, dealing with cancer drugs, there's four levels you have to go through before it's put up for human use and examination. And so what occurs is everybody gets through the Ames test, which is step one, in which will this substance harm a cancer cell if you place it on it in vitro? And, of course, almost anything will harm a human cell. Coca-Cola will because of the citric acid. Yeah, because of the citric acid in it. So then the second thing is will it behave in a different manner for the stage two, and then stage three is something else in stage four is actually being used in clinical trials. When a drug gets to stage four, the stock of the investors is worth, if they started with a couple of $1 million and registered with the FDA and got through stage one and then a couple of $1 million the second year to see it get through stage two, and I'm not talking about bribing the government, I'm just talking about almost anything can pass the first two stages. But if it has a little bit of potential, but there's some reason why you're not going to be able to use it on humans and you already know it, that becomes irrelevant. So then at that point, if it gets through the third stage of testing, then all of a sudden it looks like it's a contender to become a cancer drug in the richest country in the world. And that's worth a lot of money. But they know all the time that it's not going to make it through step four because it may be too toxic, or it may harm the kidneys, or it may do this or may do that. So by the time you find out that the drug was not accepted for stage four actual clinical use, your stock has already made more money than it would have made had you just been an investor in that company. And you were going to make money off the company selling that medicine. So hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars are made in this manner all the time. People hear about a new cancer stock. It's at the stage two level. Oh, my goodness, it passed stage three. Let's buy it. And the brokers get out, and they sell it. And the whole time, the researchers within that company know that it's not going to really be a candidate for human clinical trials because there's a problem with it. And so we have that going on. And so between the politics of we've got a multi-billion dollar chemo market, and for a new chemotherapy to come to fruition and be used in the United States, so last one I remember that they did an accounting of was Taxol, which comes from the Pacific yew tree and is now made synthetically. but it costs $258 million in just not R&D, not research and development, but just in lobbying to get it through the FDA. And so we're out of the country. We're in Mexico. We look at the world literature. We see what's going on. A lot of clues that we get from our own investigations. We've spent better part of $1 million just running down leads. If there's something that affects cancer anywhere in the world, we want to know about it. There's an acid that we're looking at, which is very unique, that sells for $60,000 a pound. And so it would take somebody about probably half a pound of taking the acid, which is has very low toxicity. It's from nature, but we're always looking at something, and what we try to do is get the delivery systems so that we can get the medication to the tumor, and that's really what we do best. Some of the oldest things are some of the best and most dependable in repeatability of effectiveness. But something new could come along tomorrow and be valid. So we have 200 different kinds of cancer. In North America alone, meaning Mexico, Canada, and the United States, we're losing 1 million people a year. In the United States specifically, 1,200,000 are diagnosed with cancer yearly. We lose 625,000 people a year. That's 10 times the people lost in the Vietnam War were losing yearly in the United States. A town of 600,000, think of it like this, a town of 600,000 people disappears every year.
Wow.
I know. And like sheep, because we it's not a whole town in one place where we can understand that it's like some type of terrorism by a disease in which some terrorist could release a nuclear weapon in a town of 600,000 people. We would spend trillions defending ourselves, but if everybody's soft killed from having a bad water, bad air, bad food, and bad treatment, nobody says anything about the 600,000 people that were killed. And so it's a matter, our consciousness is so impaired right now between the last two decades of our politics. Actually, since Jack Kennedy was killed, our politics have not been normal, and now it's taking effect on people that were strong spirited and independent and righteous people and good people and straight people and honest people. They've got us into we can't talk to each other about common problems because in America there's 26 different insurance companies. So how do we know where everybody's talking apples to oranges? The one thing that I thought was, and I don't think they realized this, or they would have never done it. They wanted to do a general social medical care in the United States, socialized one. Actually, in some ways, socialized medicine, if you had everybody taking the same product, being treated by a socialized system, can you imagine 300 million of us being able to talk about the same problems? It would have huge political power because somebody in Wyoming would be agreeing with somebody in Florida, and somebody in New York, and somebody in Southern California, and we could all be on the same page at the same time as what's wrong with our health care. And that's where national issues come from, and national power derives from the grassroots. And so, above all, they don't want us to have grassroots unity. Now, our clinic does a lot of stuff. I mean, we were giving time-release nucleosides in liver injections of tumors in livers during the Gulf War. and that's how far back a lot of our technology is. And so I just did read an article about a guy that had developed that in the United States, and he's fighting trying to get it approved 2 years ago. And yet yeah. we've been doing it forever. We had one of my patients. And one thing I would love to hear from you on, and I mean this, is that we used to see cancer cave in to I'm talking 30 years ago to what we were doing. Lung was not that difficult, and liver was not that difficult, and this was just using IVs, and now the same substance has virtually very little effect on the same cancer. And I'm thinking that what we're looking at now is a something that mutated on its own or somehow became a more virulent cancer. Does cancer seems to be tougher to you than or do you find that cancer's more, we know it's killing the same amount of people that it used to kill. In 1947, the year I was born, that was the first year that the American Cancer Society took a census on survivability percentages. And at that time, lung cancer, 15% of the people who contracted lung cancer survived. 85 didn't. And now it's 16%, and that's 66 years later.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they show that they're living longer, but then they die of a heart attack from maybe what they went through with radiation or chemo, or the general malaise of having cancer, of being starved, of your immune system being down, of opportunistic infections coming on board to cancer patients. But they don't really list if the person dies of an infection caused by the chemotherapy harming the immune system, or just simply the damage done by the tumors in which an infection was there. It had nothing to do with chemo. But they're going to list that person as having died of an infection or having died of endocarditis or pericarditis that was secondary to the infection affecting the heart or what have you. So a lot of people are not getting written up as having died from cancer when it was the underlying cause of the problem. And so I think the stat changed during George Bush's time. It used to be at the American Cancer Society, you could go online, look up your cancer, look up male or female, and see what your survivability probability was. And then all of a sudden, if you go to the American Cancer Society now and look up the stat, you cannot, I don't care who you are, if you're the man who invented derivatives, which is incomprehensible and cannot be explained, then you're going to have trouble reading the American Cancer Society's stat on cancer deaths, because it's impossible to understand what they're saying in those papers. It used to be cases reported, deaths reported, one column for male, one column for female. Pretty easy. But now it's the most complicated thing you can imagine. So
Dr. Rogers,
we live in a strange world. Go ahead.
There's a new on PubMed.gov. There's a peer-reviewed study of glutathione that shows that no matter what kind of cancer therapy you're taking, whether it's heat or chemical, it increases the efficacy of whatever you're doing. And you might want to speak to that.
Yeah, right. And there's a potentiators or there's a lot of them. How a cancer cell will have X amount of room for sodiums and chlorides for the cell's daily energy production. And most of the chemos are preserved by sodium chloride salt because they have a longer shelf life and have less chance of going bad if they're locked up in salt crystals as in a dilution of, or put into a dilution of salt and then dehydrated in a cold process, probably freeze-dried, and then put into a glass vial and sealed. And so you want your product that you have money in to last a long time on the shelf in case somebody doesn't immediately use it. So they in order to keep their profit up, they basically use a lot of sodium chloride. So when you rehydrate the chemotherapy, it comes out as a salt type of a water molecule has chemotherapy hooked to salt, which is hooked to water. Now, when that gets to the cancer cell, if the patient has dehydration and maybe has more salt in their intercellular structure than normal, or if they eat a lot of salt or what have you, if there's no reason for that salt to be allowed into that cancer cell, your chemo's not going to get in. So in the practice of medicine, we've got people that are concerned about the bottom line on preserving the chemotherapy until it's purchased, actually making it so that certain patients, maybe those that use a lot of salt or they have kidney problems and they have a higher salt level than the average patient, next thing you know, even the chemo that's proven to be effective will have trouble. As I said about the producers, there was a hormone blockers that were used for breast patients, and they were supposed to extend the life 3, 4, 5 years. And after 8 years of using them, and it took that long, which I don't understand why it didn't take 3 or 4 years as predicted, but eight years later, they finally did an analysis and found that what you actually gained, if your cancer was hormone receptive by using the blockers, was 2 months.
Hmm. And what did you lose?
Yeah.
In terms of the rest of your organs and
And money.
Oh.
You lose the equity in your house for your children. You're not only leaving them, but you're leaving them broke.
And that stress alone is killing you, too.
Oh, and the stress alone is a huge killer. So we look at everything in the world. If there's anything affecting cancer, we want to know about it. And we spend a lot of money doing research and looking at it. And we're very conservative. If for something to be on the team at our institute, it's got to be effective. We're very happy. We've got some very important things that we worked really hard for. It's a little early now, but the last 3 prostate patients that we took, we knocked them out all 3 in a row. Now, I'll remind you that's early, and 3 is nothing to because with humans. And cancer, it's like the variables are like trying to win the lottery. There's so many different kinds of cancer, and there's so many different humans involved with it that you really can't make generalities. But we had one patient that had a 120 PSA, but he was going on 14 years with me. And then his cancer became resistant. He was stage 4 when I got him. He only had a few months left, and that was 14 years ago. So I could give you his phone number tonight, and be happy to. But now we're in a second phase of what we're doing after being sidetracked in Mexico for a little while with some of the problems of the country, but we're in Matamoros, and we're one half, 2 blocks into Mexico, in an area that's near the new American embassy and very safe and very easy, and we provide transportation over, and you sleep in Brownsville, Texas, and play at South Padre Island. So anyway, we are doing stuff all the time that is advancing the last three decades that I've been working, and I'm thrilled that we're getting repeatability back. It was like cancer became all of a sudden resistant across the country,
What year was that?
The first time I noticed that cancer was changing, I think, is 8 or 9 years ago. And I remember at the time, chemtrails is the only thing I have noticed that matches a nationwide systemic response. All other things like, I can't imagine. We've seen GMOs come on board during that time, but not that long ago. GMOs have been in the last 4 or 5 years. Or maybe I'm wrong.
Well, you know, there's Dr. Rogers.
I had a question. What about people that come to you that have already had chemo and radiation? Does that change the protocol that you need, or does that change they relate to the medicine?
That's a great question. They will have a toxicity. And it depends on the type of chemo they got as to how we look at them, but it's not unusual for us to detox a person very rapidly first. In the old days, and I mean in the 70s, we were part of a study of like 1,500 people that had received EDTA chelation, and so I knew why EDTA worked and what it worked on and what it didn't work on, and why the heart was running better in patients that were getting it for cardiovascular disease, and what we were seeing in the analysis of the urine that was coming out, and which heavy metals were coming out. And EDTA is very good for heavy metals. The problem is that light metals, I believe, are causing a lot of problems.
Barium.
Aluminum.
That's what's in chemtrails.
Yeah, and we have other chelates. You got to remember, the word chelation means to hook onto something, as you're well aware of, Margaret. But the chelates are a huge family, and it just depends. What we did was we started looking for what hooks to what, and so we have light metal chelates and heavy metal chelates simultaneously. We have things which will help to detox the liver. Of all kinds of things, and so sometimes we'll take a patient and detox them before we get started on them. But that being given, if we don't have time, if somebody's in real trouble, real fast, that's our typical patient. We get people who are in immediate trouble, that's okay, because we learned under that very condition. And so we're used to that. We've got a lot of stuff that hooks to what cancer has got to use for fuel. And so we Trojan horse a lot of stuff into the cell that the cell has a wanted sign on it because it's in rapid division. And a good example is our 120 PSA patient had not passed urine properly for 4 years, and getting gradually worse every year. His energy was down. He's about 70 years of age, and he had some swelling in the pubic area, and so after one injection, we saw the swelling go down, the energy went up. He said he put in a week of work and it was nothing to him to do what used to be laborious. And that meant that the cancer that was using his fuel and growing apparently got harmed. And the urine stream came back normal. And And the patient before him, we only had a 22 PSA, but yet we had two tumors by scan showing, and these are places in the States that we allow. The U.S. has great technology for telling you what's wrong. And so,
right.
So when people come in, they bring us their records, and then we send them back to wherever they came from, and that's where we get our report card.
Huh.
We're completely empirical.
Right.
We seldom diagnose a patient, and we seldom tell a patient that they're cancer-free, unless, of course, we got the report before they did. Go ahead.
What about the immune system? Do you work with people and on the immune system to build it?
Right, exactly. We'll inoculate a tumor so that it looks like to the immune system a tuberculosis abscess, and we'll make it show up as something that the immune system has not been blinded by the surface of the tumor has the ability to tell an immune cell as if it was Star Wars, I'm not the cancer you're looking for. And that literally happens. And so what we do is if we can get our hands on the tumor or see it or touch it or feel it or locate it by scan, we'll paint it with a different problem.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah.
What about metastatic? How do you deal with that?
Okay, it depends. If it goes to bone, we have a time-release bone injection that we will go to the site, and it sounds drastic, but say a person has four ribs that have metastasized with lung or breast cancer. Okay. Well, they're very easy to find, and cancer grows like moss on a tree. It grows on the outside, going to the inside when it's metastatic, when it's not true bone cancer. And so all of the metastatic cancer that goes to the bone will start eating from the outside of the bone towards the inside. And so thus it becomes kind of spongy and brittly, and the patient can hear us with like an insulin syringe, touch the area, and if it's solid bone, he'll hear a tapping like somebody's tapping on the door. And we know that that's solid bone. Now, if he hears something that sounds like Rice Krispies, a crunching sound, we have just found cancer. And we'll drop that medication directly in on top of it, and it's like a paste, a very thick paste. And on ribs, the tissue that's running on top of your rib cage holds the medication in place. So you lock the cancer and the medicine in the same room.
We have a Cherokee a friend here in this county. His wife has had a very slow growing bone cancer for many years, and she gets scanned every few months. And she started taking a product that supercharges your body to create lots more glutathione, and she went in after a month and took a scan, and they said, "Wow, you know, your cancer's getting a little better." So,
and when they say a little better, a lot of times it's like 85% or 90% better.
Yeah.
Before
we forget, we got to make sure to get your website out. Dr. Rogers' website is doctorofhope.com.
Yeah, you can spell out doctor, doctorofhope, www.doctorofhope.com.
And very soon you're going to have doctorofhoperadio.com.
Yes,
and
we're going to have 24-hour information on cancer and on research and on the latest things that we're finding, and reports from our patients will be on there, so that you can hear from them with their own words.
And
nice. That's wonderful.
Starting this evening, a few hours, all anybody has to do, remember to get to this show is www.defendmylife.com,
defendmylife.com, and it'll redirect right to this this interview. And hey, Mark had a question, and we also have a caller that had a question. Mark, what was your question?
Well, what I was interested in from both Dr. Rogers and Margaret both was there was something I recall I had heard about cancer being involved with scrambling the frequencies of the biophotonic light communication in the body that specifically had to deal with the human healing processes. In other words, you know, it's like a frequency channel there that the body uses to talk to itself about healing, and these various compounds and all kinds of any kind of thing would essentially scramble these frequencies, and so the body wasn't healing, and that would be cancer.
Yeah, Mark, you're absolutely right. There are frequencies in 68, that early. I'd read an article that really caught my eye, and there was a guy that was on the Nobel Laureate Committee for Medicine, and he was a retired cardiovascular surgeon. He'd spent the last 15 years dealing with frequencies, and so I called him in Sweden. Luckily he spoke English, because I did not speak Swedish. And at that point I said, tell me about your frequencies. I think it was in American Scientific or something. It was an article way different than typical for that magazine. And so he goes, well, here's the deal. And now I realize he must have been midnight when I called him. Because it was about 6 o'clock in the afternoon, Texas time, but he was very nice. He goes, well, thank you for calling, and yes, it's been my interest. And he said, here's what I ran across. He said, as you're taking the tumor down using a certain frequency, the health of the cells, like you're saying, the radicals, the minerals, anything that is abnormal within that cell is going to affect that frequency. And thus, the tumors that all have cells that are being harmed by a frequency that is blocking the frequency of the cancer cell to grow, it's going to take the tumor down. And as the tumor starts to go down, it changes frequency within the tumor. So that then the blocker that you're using no longer blocks. In other words, he said he would see a tumor come down 50%, and then it would table off there. Some went 35%, some disappeared entirely. But when you got it down to a certain point, because of the chemistry, intracellular chemistry of each one of the cancer cells of the tumor, as it was sick, its chemistry changed. And its frequency changed. Now, his point was is that there was no way to find out at that time. So he decided to get something that ran a spectrum of Hertz transmissions coming out, so that it ran an entire spectrum of things that were 20,000 cycles down to 12 cycles. And it would keep running through it and running through it and running through it and running through it. And so the problem was is that the correct frequency would maybe be somewhere in that spectrum, but you were only getting, say, 100th or 1,000th of the time spent in transmission was correct, and the other 999 was not. Now, they do have a new device that is almost virtually a TENS unit, and it goes they shave your scalp, and they put electrodes for a brain cancer patient on all sides of your body, and then they have a pulse, and then they have they send electricity through there, as opposed and what it does is it's crossing through the tumor from every direction, causing a chaos, and that chaos of electrical current coming through there doesn't harm the tissue, but it does indeed stop the cycle necessary for the cancer to grow. And that thing was patented, and the patent was approved about 18 months ago, and it's probably going to be on the market pretty soon. But you have to almost come from all the sides at one time because of this, as the tumor dies, it changes, but they're using electricity to the point of coming through there that they're probably making every hertz or cycle in the spectrum continuously from 50 different points of the scalp at one time. And so thus they're keeping enough of the blocking hertz in play to be getting results.
Nice. That's yeah, and actually I come from a very different direction than you do, doctor, because most of the people that I've worked with in South America and Africa are I guess you could call them spiritual healers, and when they have they talk about frequency in their own way.
Where
the ionic synapses mm-hmm. are depolarized, and the amplitude and the rhythm that they're touching actually does change the frequency. I mean, they will talk about if you take a liver cell and it ends up in the stomach, it has its own consciousness, and the
mm-hmm.
stomach has kind of a global consciousness,
mm-hmm.
and they can't, the chaos is there. So in spiritual healing, even though they don't have the scientific terminology, what they are doing is reintegrating the knowledge that the body had where it was working as a whole.
When it was happy.
When it was happy, and
when
also
it was happy.
The resonance, you know, so that, you know, a stomach cell resonates as a stomach cell because that's its information and that's its
Margaret,
in the body.
You are so right. You know, I spent decades asking patients, every patient I ever had, how do you think you got cancer? And I heard every story in the book, and they all almost could be put into two or three categories real quick. There was the one that was the most prevalent that we see in the world today. If a couple has been together a long time, one of them dies and the other one's head is not screwed on straight, usually they live under how many years?
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years,
mm-hmm.
If not quicker. So as soon as, and this was actually a group out of Pennsylvania ran across this neuropeptide in the spleen. Well, the spleen is where we keep all our soldier cells for
mm-hmm.
the immune system. And so here's a brain message. Think of it as a piece of postage sitting in the spleen. And these young graduate students all nearly got kicked out of their program. They were doing research, and they said, we found a neuropeptide in the spleen. Next thing you know, they're having to write these long papers concerning the grant money about how they did nothing wrong and blah, blah, blah. But they stood by their guns. So they gave them another grant to see, okay, let's see this year if you can find that neuropeptide. And they did. They found the neuropeptide that's in our spleen. So our brain is saying something to where we store our immune cells. Heretofore, there was no relationship between the brain and the spleen. So here's this peptide, and they're saying what could it possibly be doing there, and my theory is that all of these people that decide that they don't want to live, and it's not that they want to die, they're just not affirmative to their body that they wish to live. They've lost somebody, they're sad, and so they send this letter I'm really not sure if I want to live. They send it to the soldier cells, who will obey them, whatever you say. This is where free will of the spiritual realm comes into. This is where the physics of real life and real existence come into being. If you say, well, it's okay, and this goes for cancer patients that come to me for treatment, they'll say, well, I'm very confident that Jesus will save me. I said, well, if he does, then he will have violated the law of free will, because they'll let you jump off a bridge. You have to save yourself, and that's in other words, your body is an earthly thing. It's and you have control over it. You can ruin it, or you can value it. You can destroy yourself, or you can live a long and productive life. But it's in your hands.
And I also believe that the body. Well, they've already decided, and so no matter what kind of treatment you might want to give them too, it's not going to work. Because they want to go, but they might not consciously want to say that.
No, they'll say it. It's what they say to themselves that gets them killed.
Exactly. Well,
act a certain way to their children. They'll act a certain way to you, Margaret, and they'll act a certain way to me. And I know you already are aware of this. Pardon me. In what you're saying, something doesn't sound right here, and I'm saying it too. And the next thing you know, nothing does work as well because their immune system is standing down. Yeah, and if you say, please, somebody else kill my cancer doctor, I always tell them, listen, I'll do my job, but you have got to do your job. Don't come in here and say to your body, don't worry about it. Dr. Rogers is going to kill my cancer. I said, I need your immune system, I need it on board, and you need it, and you have got to speak properly to that immune system and tell it, kill the cancer. It can't say, don't say something like, help me with the cancer, or it's okay if I die, I believe in God, it's okay if I die. What the letters that you are sending down to that spleen, the immune cells will obey. And the reason that they will obey it is, and this is just Dr. Rogers, I could be way wrong, in ancient times, when somebody had rheumatoid disease, some type of a rheumatoid arthritis or some other immune system disorder in which their immune system was killing them, eating them alive on a daily basis, until they got into despair and said, I don't care if I die, let me die, then their immune system would back off and the patient would get better.
You know, I totally agree with
that. It's a button.
Thing.
Yeah.
It's a button, and I was with the high priest of the Zulus several years ago, and I'd had my second bout with that particular disease that I don't like the name.
No.
And he said, his name was Buza Mazulu Credo Mutwa, the Zulu high priest. He said, he told me a story about how he'd had cancer three times, and he went to a doctor because he had something on his leg. And the doctor said, well, you've got melanoma. And he said, well, what is this beautiful sounding name? What does it mean? And he said, well, we have to cut your leg off. And he said, but doctor, where would you cut it? Would you cut it here? And then I could walk, you know, I could make a bottom leg. And the doctor said, no, we have to cut it up off at the hip. And he said, I'm sorry, doctor, I can't do that. And he said he was so weak. This is his third time with cancer. And he was an artist, and he made this giant 30-foot-high mother goddess. And he got up on a ladder. He had his friends tie him to the ladder. And he said, I put all of my fight and joy in, my obsession to create this thing of beauty. When that happened, my cancer ran away. Mm-hmm. And then he said, cancer is afraid of ecstasy.
Yeah, it is. It's afraid of happiness. It's afraid of joy. It's afraid of fight. If you can fight happy, you can almost whip any cancer. And we use a lot of humor in the clinic. And I try to get people to get honest with themselves, and I try to say we try to figure out who needs them, and what is that person to them, and wouldn't they prefer staying and doing something constructive with their time than telling their immune system to stand down so that they become virtually committing suicide.
Yeah, exactly. And that's really wonderful to hear, because there's so many it's the whole gestalt of the body, what you're
mm-hmm.
treating. You're treating
it's all
their
together.
Mind, their psyche, the physical ailments, and ultimately
the spiritual.
The body, yes, the spiritual, mm-hmm. and the body can heal itself given the opportunity. I mean, there's some instances where maybe it's karmic or whatever that...
Well, there's never been a disease.
Nobody's God, you know?
Yeah, there's never been a disease that hasn't been cured by the human body sometime, someplace, somewhere, period.
Exactly. And, you know, a doctor, you can find a way into... to the cell, to the memory, to the frequency, to the tumor. But ultimately, the body says, okay, let me get back on track. Let me work this
mm-hmm.
out. I mean, because
mm-hmm.
that person that you are healing needs to heal themselves, too. That's
they're still sick.
They're still
yeah.
sick.
The tumor's gone. They're still sick.
Yeah.
I had a truck driver that had liver cancer 3 times. Every time... we'd get rid of the cancer by scan. It'd be a year or so later, another scan. He would be okay, no sign of any tumor, adenocarcinoma A. And then all of a sudden, he'd be back in, and I'd say, you got to quit smoking. You got to get out of the diesel truck with all the fumes coming up in there. And you got to get exercise and do anything else as a job. But he finally told me, he said, well, that's not the reason I'm getting cancer. I'm getting cancer because I left my first wife for a younger woman, and I feel guilty about the children, and I figure I ought to die.
Oh, that's,
and so,
yeah, he got it right, didn't he, for himself?
Yeah, he knew exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, Margaret, some of the healers and stuff you work with, one of the things I think is they seem to have an ability to know if a person kind of on the spiritual level has made the choice to make a healing possible or accept it or not accept it.
I don't think you have to be a healer to understand that. I think, you know, we all can intuit with other people, even the most blustery ones, what they really want.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I don't think that's a magical surprise. I think that they do, that great healers are connected to the way that I've seen it, and is this divine source, which is a kind of a perfect vibrational frequency for anything necessary. And so spiritual healing will heal spiritual diseases. It's very great, in my opinion, if your body is toxic from environmental pollutions or food pollutions or alcohol or cigarettes, that you stop that and that the body get cleansed.
When I was young, Margaret, I used to think in terms of categories, and like yourself, I think now that there's only wellness or there's only sickness. And all the different levels and different things coming in, they're all the same.
Well, yes, they are, and no, because if you're born with a genetic disease,
mm-hmm.
It's much harder to necessarily cure that. Person comes in with something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is wellness or sickness, but there are different levels and different capabilities, and sometimes making these distinctions helps with the approach.
Absolutely, it does to the healer. But we have to hit everything. You know,
exactly.
Holistic. Well, we had a patient 30 years ago. Her grandmother died at 39 with breast cancer. Her mother died at 39 with breast cancer, and after Duke didn't cut clear of margins, she called me, and she was 39 years of age. I mean, it was just like an alarm clock in their genetics.
Yeah.
at 39, they just got breast cancer. And so she having seen the grandmother and the mother go, decided to do anything else. And she's still alive in New Bern, North Carolina right now. That's been 3 decades. But we had to treat her for over 7 years. And I think that in genetic cancer, say, for example, I think that whatever allowed that gene to turn on, and then when it does turn on, it doesn't instantly form cancer. It may turn on exposure to some chemical or to even having children, where you had all kinds of hormones and all kinds of rapid cell division, and it may have turned this thing on, and then your immune system's been keeping it in check, and you reach to where you start to cool off a little bit in your late 30s, the next thing you know, and mid-50s, big time for mid-50s. Here and so it wasn't immune at all. It was simply the circulatory system that delivers the soldier cell cools off in the human, becomes diminished, and so we're not getting as many soldiers to the site. So in genetic cancer, anyway, what we did was we just told her that we were going to treat her for as long as possible and hope that the chemistry changed back. Now, I don't know if the chemistry changed back, but the cancer never came back. But after 7 years of being our patient, she said, "This is the seventh year. I can't wait to quit coming to you."
Well, you made a good friend.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, we're friends, but she
well,
just said,
yeah.
"Yeah." She just had all the treatment she wanted.
You're also trained
good,
as a psychiatrist.
Great. That's a great story.
Aren't you also trained as a psychiatrist, doctor?
Yes, yes, I am. Specialization is that, and I tell you, Margaret is wonderful in her sensitivity to that we've got to be real. Well, it's got to be real. It, when she said that about that they would say something to us that would lead us on. That is the truth, because they're leading their families on, they're leading their best friends on, and they're really not saying how they feel. So having this Margaret digging at you to find out truly what's going on will save a lot of lives in her lifetime, not counting everything else that she knows. So. Healers a healer can get you leveling with yourself, your immune system can come back online.
You know, I was in Brazil and there was a guy there, young, had an aggressive brain tumor, and this was a John of God, and he said, "Well, I want to get a spiritual healing." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, what is your doctor saying?" He said, "I'm not going to a doctor. I'm not going to have them do anything." I said, "Look, get back on the plane, go to the doctor, get that taken care of, and have the spiritual healing."
And have it. Yes,
yeah.
Ma'am. And.
No.
Yeah.
You cannot ignore,
no.
You have to have both.
Well, that's why I said everything is together. In other words, it's a checklist with us. We're pretty good with certain things about change of attitude. Now, chemical change of attitude. Well, you know, ayahuasca. If I had somebody that was happy that he was going to meet his maker, and he's 35 years of age, and for some reason the chemo's not working in the States, and here he's talking about how he's really looking forward to death and things like that. I think that what it would tell me is that 35 is the wrong age to be dying. How do we know that? Because, you know, 77 would be more appropriate. So maybe we should try to quit saying that. But you can't have them fake it, can you? Because it's what that letter going out to that immune system in that spleen is saying. It's okay, let me go. Stand down. Don't do anything. Don't save me. I'm looking forward to this. This is what I want. And so for these healers to use psychoactive drugs, I think it is smart.
Well, I mean, you know, the first I go down to the Amazon, and I've been using these plants.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I personally don't consider them. I guess, you know, chemically they're psychoactive, but they have a living spirit in them. In my
well, you absolutely made me mistake
and,
myself because when I mean psychoactive, I mean psychoactive as in the way they're looked at up here. That I see them just as being medicine and being something from life.
Exactly, they're natural, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, when I was down there, I would see certain spirits, if you want to call them that, and mm-hmm. they would come, and they would do like doctoring, and some of them I would see them, and I would say, "Who is that with the red painted face and the black wearing this mm-hmm. up in the tree?" And they would describe all their cosmology, these spirits that I didn't know anything about before I went down there. So when psychoactive is one term, but so I never think, you know, I try to describe to people that these are not hallucinatory because what you're seeing is real. And I do think that this is a very, very good medicine. It doesn't cure everything. People are not ready for it. There's so many different kinds of ways to cure things.
Somebody's drinking themselves to death up here. I would say go down there and take those medicines that come from living things and see if the life in them doesn't correct the life problems in you.
Hear, hear.
Yeah.
That's right.
I mean, it's crazy not to send somebody down there that is on a collision course, and there's nothing up here that's going to help them. We do things which allow people to get in deeper contact. We've made a record of through the years of the various ways that grace come to people, and healing comes to people, and what form it takes. And And there's even a mechanical presentation of other dimensions when they're involved.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
And there are a lot of anecdotal
mm-hmm.
stories about stage four, you're finished and
mm-hmm.
being healed with Natam, which is ayahuasca,
mm-hmm.
according
mm-hmm.
to the Quechua, or now I was going to say San Pedro, but I mean
mm-hmm.
The northern one. I can't think of peyote.
Yeah.
there's a lot of anecdotal evidence, so it does have its purpose.
It's wonderful. It
yeah.
needs to be. It needs to be up here in a humane setting, meaning that not threatening to the patient, not horrifying, not scary, so that doesn't look like you're in a hospital getting ready to die. It needs to be among friends where you're treated as a human being, and that will be the first thing that will allow the patient to allow the medicine to start to come into them, and we should have centers like that all over this country, and we will have them someday, because look
so?
At look at what we lose to alcoholism. Look at the amount of people that are killed by alcoholism,
and drugs too. Yeah,
can you believe that? Isn't that we're losing 625,000 in the States to cancer, and between drugs and alcoholism, and here is something that will come from a living plant, and it will change the cells of your brain. It's not symptomatic treatment.
No. It's not. And
no.
That's a lot of what's wrong with modern medicine in the United States and Europe is it's symptomatic. It doesn't get to the cause.
No. Well, there's no money. There's no money in getting to the problem.
No, there is no money in that. It's a big business.
It's a big business and dangerous business. Big business.
Well, the federal government found out recently, you know, the reason why we don't have 50, 60-mile-an-hour cars is because the economists have taken a look and they know that if we have a quantum leap in mileage, they're going to sell less gasoline and get less road taxes. Well, guess what, folks? They want people dying because they know they can't handle the Social Security
Well, if they don't purposely want it, they're doing a great job of mismanagement. That's all I can say.
That's right. Yeah. Well, you know, there's that urban legend of the guy that bought a Xerox copy from the Federal Reserve Bank years ago. Now, I used to pick up was a messenger for a year in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Heard this story, and when he took it to his business, he found that there was a sheet in there. The last sheet that had been copied was part of a page of a newsletter from the Fed talking about, you know, how they needed to encourage the use of slow poisons like white sugar, white flour, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the long run, you know, they were just going to overwhelm the system with healthy people.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well,
it's all about money.
That's one thing I think is very important that people in America should understand, that you need to eat clean food.
Well,
they don't,
and I've never seen anything like it. I think we've become disheartened. We used to have leaders, and stewardship was a way of life. I mean, when Harry Truman went home, he took a train, and he arrived in Missouri, and he took a cab home from the train station. And then from then on, he walked to and from work every day about 10 blocks and had no Secret Service.
Yeah.
And Bill Clinton, when he got in trouble, signed a bill allowing derivative trading that hadn't existed in America since 1935. And then the next president allowed carte blanche to occur. And then the whole middle class lost everything they had, and nobody was prosecuted. So if there is some responsible government in charge, I, for the life of me, can't seem to locate it.
The government is not going to help you. You have to listen and help yourself. That means you have to eat clean food, organic. Go to your local markets. Don't eat the stuff in the middle of the grocery store in the boxes. Eat only fresh foods. Only,
yeah, I duplicated some studies that were from about 600 in North Carolina in which they'd taken fossilized feces and analyzed it, and it had, among Cherokees, it had 38% fiber. And the agriculture was about half of the content, and wild gathering was the other half. And so what I did with the 38%, I got organic bran, and I soak it in flaxseed oil. To a gallon of bran, I put about 12 ounces of flaxseed oil in, and I soak the fibers. And it softens them up, too. They go from very sticky and splintery to very soft and smooth. And then you put that with almond milk, 4 heaping tablespoons with almond milk, and that becomes breakfast. You eat some type of clean protein for lunch. And then at night, some type of fruit, blueberry, and make sure it's as organic as possible, and some type of almond milk. And so that 38% fiber back into your diet with flaxseed oil, And the flaxseed oil will after the acid hits it, will give off a linoleic acid, a butyric acid, not unlike, and both of those are real or very hostile to cancer. And the bran itself works to scrub the entire digestive tract with flaxseed oil daily. And that's where we see a lot of cancers.
Aloe vera is good for that too.
Oh, aloe vera is wonderful. Yeah.
For the intestines. Yeah, a lot of people can avoid some of these sicknesses by eating carefully, and I'm concerned about the chlorine and fluoride in tap water.
Tap water's out. Most people cannot afford that yet. Yet, if they really wanted to deliver clean water without chlorine through UV light, and it wouldn't be that tough to set them up within the plumbing system so that we knew that by sampling the water, you would know pretty fast how often you'd have to have a UV light station. And they use very little electricity. I think they use 40, 60, 80-watt bulbs, things like that, but completely sanitize it coming into your house.
Get inexpensive filters just for the chlorine and the fluoride and, some of the bacteria.
Another way to do this, go to YouTube and put in the search terms Genie Water Wand. And this is a proprietary device that creates a field that also works for automobiles. It disperses either hydrocarbons or blood cells, and it kills anything. It doesn't belong in water. Invented by a man who used to carry a badge as a water inspector for Cook County, Illinois. Good friend of mine, John Graham. He's at intelwater.com, Intel with one L. And I misspoke before. It's defendmyownbody.com is where this interview will be. And
okay.
I needed to interject that.
Okay, super. Defendmyownbody.com.
.com if they want to hear this interview. And this will be featured for our state. Anybody that comes to this station, this is the first interview they'll see, and we'll probably have several thousand listeners within a week.
Yes. Margaret, I forgot to just briefly mention, and it deals with your part of the world, that when Dr. Ferguson and the head of the National Cancer Institute decided that they were going to feature Dr. Ferguson's medications, the committee turned them down. The next thing you know, Dr. Ferguson was threatened. The director of the National Cancer Institute had to go to the White House and be dressed down about what his job entailed and what he thought he was doing. And it wasn't by Carter, but by one of the chief of staff. And then Dr. Ferguson was threatened. He was in San Antonio, of all places, and he sent all of his field notes to me from the Amazon. And so I have his handwritten notes, and that's how I started way back when with those notes from Dr. Ferguson.
Super.
He moved out to California and went into hiding.
There's a doctor in Washington State who's a natural doctor, MD, who has been abused and mistreated, and he's because of the kind of medicine that he is doing, which is more natural. I don't know his name. If you look up Washington State, you'll see it. But this is happening all the time. I mean, the first time that I was sick was in 1999. I looked in Europe, Dominican Republic, Mexico, everywhere, because I didn't feel like I was going to get the right treatment in the United States. And I knew it, I just knew that things were not right for me. That's not to say that a lot of people don't get cured here, but...
Well, actually, half get cured, one half.
Okay,
it's a coin toss. It's a coin toss.
Yeah.
It really is. But that's why the way that they do chemo here and radio, here's a good point about why you were correct, is that if one half of of the cancer victims don't survive in the United States, and that's just the numbers. There's no arguing with them because it's always been around one half. Of the people who are pronounced cancer-free that have insurance, they're almost at a disadvantage. When they have insurance and they're pronounced cancer-free by scan, then at that point, the insurance company no longer will pay for the treatment that caused them to be cancer-free.
Right.
And so they hit the brakes right away. The doctor knows not even to bring it up to the patient, and they don't warn the patient. And there should be a patient bill, cancer patient's bill of rights on being warned and having these warnings given to you that, okay, dear patient, you have just been found free of cancer by scan. This is not an exact science. Anything the size of a grain of black pepper can still be a tumor and still be forming. You should follow up with scans, or you should choose to continue treatment until whatever time your body cannot take anymore or you wish. Now, but see, it because the insurance company is paying for it, of the half of the people who are told that they were free of cancer by scan who were getting chemotherapy, one half of those come back with cancer, and it's very common, and kill the patient. So
I am not surprised at those figures.
Mm-hmm.
I am not surprised at those figures. And, you know, they wanted to give me some stuff, and radiation was one of them. And I looked at the side effects, like, liver disease,
mm-hmm.
liver cancer in 20
mm-hmm.
years. I think I'll take my chances elsewhere.
I think you're right.
I think I'm going to stay alive.
I think you're right.
And, you know, in the hormone therapy, you just mentioned it, and I said, broken bones, heart problems, this, that.
Mm.
You know what? I think I'm going to try something else. I can take your medicine. I can
always take
your medicine.
One half of the people should have done that.
Right.
Now, how do we know that? Because one half died.
Well, I know. I just knew it in my bones. I was like, if I want to stay alive and if I don't want to get on their wheel where they're going to make me sicker than I already am,
mm-hmm.
then I have to. And I went to South America.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where.
Well, you did the right thing.
And, you know, I came back. My doctor said, you know, he kept saying, you've got to have this. You've got to have this. You've got to have this. And he goes, what are you doing? I said, I'm spending my time in the jungle in South America with
mm-hmm.
a medicine man. And he said, well, whatever you're doing, keep on doing it. But I had the feeling that legally he had to insist that I take these things.
Oh, he does. He does.
Yeah. So people get better food and listen to this.
Well,
yeah.
Get their food straightened up and get your head right about who's going to live and who's going to die, and don't decide to be the one in the dying column, and tell your body to do what it's supposed to do: kill the cancer, keep me here, I'm not going anywhere, I'm happy with life, and get rid of whatever's in me.
Here, here.
And then you sent the right message.
And by the way, I have people call me all the time. What should I do? And I'm going to look at your site. I'm going to start sending the people down to you.
We'll treat them just like you would treat them. I like you too, because you know what you're talking about. And I need a contact in South America where we can take people who are getting ready to drink themselves to death and get their spirit back and thinking right and in that brain correctly, so that we stop this stuff.
Good.
Okay. So
on that note, we're running out of stream and need to go. And
Well, dear Otter, thank you for having me on and having such wonderful guests as Margaret and Mark. And I certainly appreciate talking to both of them immensely. Good night, guys.
Good night,
everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you.
We'll have you on another time. And good luck with your book and your other interviews. Night now.
Good night.
Though the path is not easy, I'm grateful for this life, for the chance to
to behold your face again. When my sacred journey's over, when it all comes to an end, I'll enter the next life to live again. I hope.
As Blue Water, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Radio.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? Thank you.